The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, Techstars. At the core, Techstars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, Techstars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. This is one of 20 interviews recorded in a pop-up backroom studio at Dojo 4 during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 47 is Joan Canner, co-founder and operator of Bottoms Up Bagels and creator of The Few Gap. Joan's based in Baltimore and was in town for Boulder Startup Week to see what we're up to out here. In our fun and wide-ranging discussion, we get into what sets a good bagel apart from a great one, the relationship between food and memory, forgetting and why Joan created the Fugue music app, the view of Boulder from Baltimore, and a brief history of bagels on the Front Range, according to me. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with Joan Canner from Bottoms Up Bagels. Talk a little about the meaning of bagels in your life and how that led to starting a pop-up bagel company in Baltimore.
Wow, Joel, you're hitting like on the meat of like why we started things, which is all about food and memory. And later on, we could talk about music and memory, but food and memory is so important. For me, growing up, my grandparents raised me. So Patrick Lindley, I'm Jewish, right? So like all these men like married chicksas, and I am the product of that. And we had amazing bagels in New Jersey, especially in my hometown of Irvington. There was this place called Watson Bagels. I think it started in the 40s and obviously went through the 80s. And I remember as a kid going there on Saturday nights, like that was going to be our bagel dinner. We would like rush in after like 7 o'clock, get a big old sack of bagels. It was so warm to the touch. And then we'd go home and watch the Golden Girls. And that was like our ritual. So that's a happy little bagel memory for me.
Golden Girls and bagels.
Right. Voluptuous, supple, sapphic.
Yeah.
Lunch. Creamy, old school, round.
Wow. There's a lot of words that I have not associated with Golden Girls, but there we are. Since opening in 2015, Bottoms Up Bagels has received a lot of acclaim as Baltimore's best bagel. What separates a good bagel from a great one, and what sets Bottoms Up apart from the rest?
Wow. You know, this came up yesterday when the Boulder Startup Week events. I was speaking to a bunch of folks who, they make gelatin, which is, I guess, in every part of our lives, whether you're using ballistics dummies or you're making tzatziki or other things. And they were just saying, well, what separates your product? Like, not having had it, I'm not going to produce it on site this week. I would love to in the future. It's got to be taste. Texture. If you're not used to a chewy bagel, something that a baby can teeth on, forget about it. We're not going to change anything that we do. This has also only been not even 5 minutes. I already said forget about it at least once. So I think check the box
Jersey
on that.
Girl. Yeah, yeah.
That feels right.
Yeah.
So definitely, so taste, chew, and also there's like not any garbage in it. A lot of stuff, at least back home, that's mass produced. They had things like dairy. Dairy by itself is like not garbage, but a lot of people can't digest that or have other issues. You also don't need it to make a good bagel. So let's eliminate that. And there's also anti-mold things that people put in when they're larger producers.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I believe that like things should spoil when they're natural. So for us, we just simply freeze them or ask customers to like freeze them to enjoy it the most. And there's also things called dough conditioners to get to like a certain type of, I guess, softness. So we don't do that. So I think really it starts with the product itself. And the rest of it just becomes more like how we process it by hand. Right now, we do every single step by hand. Eventually, we hope to just be doing like the final bageling stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't do a rope method that a lot of people do. We end up doing just like a poke method and then forming it that way. So I think
you
it's
poke a hole in the middle. You take a wad of dough, you poke a hole in the middle of it,
right.
And then...
and form it. So yep. It's like a lot of hands-on stuff.
I watched a really cool video on your website.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think people should watch it even just to kind of like zone out. It's very meditative when you're doing it.
Yeah, it is.
I know it's people reflected to me like how like, Joan, where are you right now?
I just want to sit and watch the bagels boil.
Yeah.
What's your background in food service?
Nil.
Nil.
Yeah. And a hush. like this very large populated room falls with the crowd. I used to cook as a kid, and as an adult, I remember like just catering stuff for different people in our lives. So I'm having a baby shower, like, you know, like my wife and I would go ahead and like cook up something for them. And people thought like we need to do a food business. The question became what, knowing that again, like we weren't classically trained, I hope to never be called chef. In case you were wondering, people like Nigella Lawson and Rachel Ray, also not chef.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering. They kind of know a couple things.
Yeah.
So I also don't need that in terms of like ego. I mean, having worked in academia, I'm used to like a stiff hierarchy. And now they work in commercial kitchens. There's still an issue with that. But that's for another time. But basically just learning on the job and iterating and taking like my background in surveying and focus groups and just asking people, what do you think? And like, what's missing? And being like receptive to that. So I'm the most non-traditional cook possible.
So you had no experience. People loved the way you cooked. Were you making bagels then?
Not at all. It was only like, gosh, in the past, I want to say like 5 or 6 years at this point, where we tried it because a friend really wanted us to make it for his birthday. So we made stuff for Jason, brought to you by his then like girlfriend, Kristen. And hey, you guys mind doing it? And we ended up doing it. It came out really well. We ended up doing also lox, which is also part of our repertoire because they go together so darn well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really great sound. I need to record that later on.
We've already got it.
That could maybe like be a ringer.
Yeah. Besides just feeding people great bagels, what is the importance of your approach to food service?
It has to be accessible. In New Jersey, you can be seated at a counter with anyone from any walk of life, truly. And you can have like your favorite thing. So bagels are both really accessible, or should be, in terms of pricing, at least to us, which I know in terms of, if you're an investor, please don't listen. But like, we really care about having like a large swath of pricing. You can get a plain bagel for $2. You can get a current lox sandwich. At the date of this taping, it is $12 in Baltimore. So that's like a swing, but you can be full with like a bagel with cream cheese for $4, you know, an egg and cheese sandwich for $5. So it has to be accessible financially. And that's just something that I experience, I want to like bring to everyone.
And you're just doing this as a pop-up, right?
Presently. So again, at the time of this taping, I may have like a part of a lease next to me for like our own space, but I probably need to help you envision what that would look like, because like a storefront for us isn't traditional.
Well, let's talk about what the pop-up looks first. In the video, the video takes us through the lead up to going to the farmer's market.
Yeah. So starting with the pop-up, good deal. So presently we're like MASH. So the Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. No, we create a bagel shop on site multiple times a week, regardless of weather. You know, at farmers markets, sometimes we can do stuff inside and have things like running water, but mostly you're going to see us like outside doing stuff. And it's amazing to me how many people are fooled by this, and that they kind of like ask greater and greater, more annoying questions about how we can do stuff. But it's incredibly transparent, which is something that we will be taking to a shop. You should be able to see how your food is made.
That's a good point. And something that's definitely missing is, you know, the whole farm to table thing is, you want to know where that food's coming from, ideally. Do you get a special gratification from serving someone that bagel and seeing them take a bite out of it and they're just blown away? And what is
eyes
that?
Eyes rolling back.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear some like enya or something.
A little cream cheese on their lip.
Right. And then you don't tell them for a while unless you really care.
Yeah.
It can be satisfying because food is like just instant gratification, really. But it's also, people can immediately tell you if they don't care for something. And because it's such a modular food, like pizza is, like people definitely have their desire to have things done a certain way. It really is gratifying. At the same time, you know, when people ask it to be skinnied out, I definitely do cringe. I mean, when you buy stuff from us, you're still getting like that kind of Jersey attitude, but you're still going to get it your way. But it doesn't mean I have to like it.
Right. If you're going to have the bagel, have the bagel.
You know what you're getting into, kids.
Yeah.
There's no type of deception in this.
Exactly.
It's a ball of carbs. Boom.
It's a ball of carbs with a big dollop of dairy on top.
There may be one of those in this room. That's not ours, but I'm looking at it. I don't know. I still eat other people's bagels. Yeah. You need to remember.
So my next question is, what does the future hold for Bottoms Up Bagels? You did kind of hint that maybe there's a signed lease agreement on a piece of paper here next to
it
you.
Is. And it would be for Baltimore City. But one of the wacky ideas I have, and I feel like this, Boulder's a really great place to say things that probably sound crazy anywhere else. So one of the things I want to do, especially while we wait for a storefront slash production facility to be created, is see where else bottoms up could work. Mm-hmm. My hypothesis, and I have a lot of hypotheses in my life, and I think here's my hypothesis for Bub. We could be anywhere in the US, in any city, and do well. So my hope before leaving here is to schedule a pop-up in Boulder and try it out, recognizing that like I'm from sea level and that's going to have a couple days prep. The realness of like altitude is there. Right.
Are you familiar at all with the bagel scene here on the Front Range?
No.
Or even
please
the,
advise.
I've lived here a long time and I can all give you a little history on the bagel evolution of Boulder and maybe a little bit in Denver. I don't know Denver as well. Mm-hmm. But when I moved here back in the mid 80s, there was the New York Deli on the Mall, and they had decent bagels. And other than that, there was nothing. And then Moe's came along back in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s. And that was the first proper bagel place in Boulder. And I remember just my friends and I, we were just ecstatic. Like real bagels in Boulder. Maybe there was Einstein. I don't know when Einstein started, but that's not really a bagel, so.
It's not. And like, just when you talk about their leadership and their connections to icky things.
And then a few other bagel places have come and gone, but Moe's is definitely the bagel place in Boulder. And they've got several locations and provide bagels for coffee shops and that kind of thing. So they make a solid bagel. And there's a place in Denver called Rosenberg's.
That I heard about. Like, it's the second time hearing about it. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, and they make a pretty solid bagel also. And supposedly they bring water in from Brooklyn.
Bullshit.
To make their bagels.
You don't need that.
I guess talk to Rosenberg about that.
You're just relaying stuff.
I'm just the messenger here.
Right.
But Rosenberg's makes a fine bagel too, and they do their own lox. And in fact, I think they also do like a cannabis-infused lox because Colorado. So anyway, so Moe's really sort of opened up the bagel frontier here on the Front Range. And we've been able to enjoy decent bagels since then. But I would love to see, you know, what you guys can do. Bring your pop-up out here and let's have a taste test. Totally.
Right. I mean, even if like we don't win the taste test, we still win by nature of being here and like showing ourselves and producing in non-home court.
Yeah, exactly. But you do have designs on having your own storefront. I think you had mentioned that you had you and your wife, who's your business partner also, right? Mm-hmm. You have a unique idea, or what is your take on what the storefront should be?
Well, I'm glad that we covered the pop-up, so thank you. That's like the nexus of everything, right? It's also part of scaling, be able to like test some stuff for lower price, right? It's easier to do that.
Right.
Farmer's market to see which neighborhoods may make sense for you. For us, or at least for me specifically, a storefront has always meant production, because when I mentioned Watson's Bagels, I had a really clear image. It's basically a big old box of a warehouse is what it was. And it was 90% production. And then it was just 10% storefront. That's it. Mm-hmm. You're seeing how things happen. It's just like every Fred Rogers episode, you're seeing the crayons like get made. That's it. Where it's almost just like, I'm trying to think, who was married to like Frida Kahlo? Remind me of that gentleman.
Diego
Rivera, right? And he had like those beautiful, like, was it paintings or etchings that he did of people like working hard. That's what you need to see. And for us, with the space that we selected, once it's built out, that's mostly what you're going to see. It's just a bunch of people and mostly women being like the butcher and the baker. And it's being like the 1940s, only in a different dimension.
Right. I grew up in Miami and I remember there was a pizza place where the guy tossed in the
door.
You could see that from through the window, from the street. And I loved watching that as a kid. So there's definitely, more back to that farm to table thing is the just watching people make your food for you.
At some point, we got away from that. Again, like you have more of an audience and people can be a pain in the ass, but I still think it's just better to keep things that open.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned since launching Bottoms Up Bagels?
I never realized how fierce I am. I mean, the kitchen industry, just food industry, I should say, it really is so primal. Wow, I'm looking at you, but like my head is like actually like in my production space right now, my current production space that we share. And man, the fact that I get the chance to like wield a knife, it's okay for me to tell people when I'm coming around the corner quickly and I can just say, no, I need that, or I didn't turn that on for you. When I worked in academia or in other settings that were also more female dominated, it was so much more passive aggressive and shitty. And the fact that I can be, I guess, active aggressive and just really feel my power is incredible. So I guess like learning about my fierceness in a different way.
And just being able to wield that in a way that's fierce, but maybe not.
But it's appropriate
confrontational.
No, it's not confrontational. It's actually just being like direct. I don't know what point being direct was just didn't seem out of fashion or wasn't like bred in me or wasn't encouraged. I still fight that sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, like, let me just rephrase this. Like, let me just cut to it. Like, no one has time for this bullshit.
Do you think that's an American thing? I was reading, there was like an essay, someone, a European wrote, they've lived in the US for 30 something years. So they know what's up here. The headline of the essay was, I need to tell you something about yourself, America. And it was just like, you're not direct enough. You just tell each other, oh, it's so nice. It's so lovely. Yeah. You only focus on the positive and you don't tell people how you really feel, or, you know, like, you need to get your act together.
You know? Out of love, you say this.
Yeah, exactly. And that really kind of resonated with me. And so, yeah, so I've tried to be more direct as well, but it's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Last bagel question. Sure. What's your favorite bagel and cream cheese pairing?
Thank you for saying pairing, because when people ask me specifically, what's the best? I'm like, all this shit is good, or else I wouldn't be getting up at 2 a.m. to make this for you. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
So there's that. But for me, so we do a smoked jalapeno cream cheese that we call Hocus Pocus. So it has like a J at the front.
Mm-hmm.
I love hearing people say Jocus Pocus, by the way.
Right.
Or like correcting each other's family members when it comes to that. So that is like smoky, lower on the Scoville units, but still like more than you're used to getting in a cream cheese. So that and like a salt or a Kimmelwick bagel, which is salt and caraway.
Wow.
Oh my God, because it's missing salt. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of need that. If people can't have salt, I feel bad for them. What a life.
Right. I've never had a salt bagel. It just doesn't appeal to me.
Yet. What? Yeah. No? Is it too like
a not a salt guy. Not a salt guy.
Okay.
So I was preparing for this interview yesterday and reading all about your bagel life and all of that. And then I just wanted to take a real quick peek at your LinkedIn to see if I was missing anything. And whoa, you've also got a music app.
Right. And you may have some sort of musical connection too.
I am a music guy. Definitely.
Yeah, I do. And again, like, there's just such a difference between Baltimore and how that's perceived as having multiple things. I've at least come, like, in my experience, right? This is all my life experience, blah, blah, blah. And then coming to Boulder, and when I visited here, spoken to people from here, like, even this week, as nascent as it is for me, there's like no question as to how that can be, you know? You know, if I'm talking about food and memory or music and memory, it just seems perfectly fluid as part of a person's life. So thanks to you and to Boulder for being receptive to that. And for me, personally, making a pitch for just some sort of move at some point, especially for Karmic Messenger, the app I currently have is Fugue. As I mentioned, it was previously named DJ Amnesia, Get to Know Your IP. And when I first went out and got everything built, which was its own burdensome road, I thought that was like a great name. Actually, like the engagement person, chief engagement officer, was like, this is an awesome name. And I searched and there was a physical DJ Amnesia. So that went by the wayside. So here we are with Fugue. And people may know Fugue stays like when you, let's say you wake up in Arizona with a family of three and you're just like, shit, like how'd I get here?
Right. There's a song about that.
Is there?
Well, Talking Heads, right?
Oh, wow. I'm just now, it's just, I'm just giving a moment of just admiration. Look into your eyes. If you hear silence, it's, feel the energy resonate. That was good. Okay. So. But also just, you know, and so that's psychological Fugue. And then there's also just like that musical component. And I'd love to like at some point show you the video that we had to explain it. But because people mispronouncing it is like one of my favorite things too. But
right.
Fugue is a great way to eliminate music that you don't want to hear. Like, I don't know for you, but for me, there's definitely music that reminds me of like shitty times, shitty people. When I hear I Hope You Dance, because it reminds me of like my first real girlfriend. And when we broke up, like this was like her song to play for me to somehow help me get over the hump of losing her. Oh my God, what a great like divide, like what emptiness I would be experiencing. So when I hear I Hope You Dance, I think I hope you go fuck yourself. So fast forward to, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I'm sharing this really beautiful beach house with a bunch of strangers, because that's how you are able to afford these things. And this woman, I sat next to her like at the beach, and she was lamenting how much time she took trying to rid herself of music that reminded her of her ex, who seemed like a really awful person. I was listening to her and trying to intuit and like just be empathic. And I thought, how can I make money out of this?
Right.
which because I'm such a softie, right? I mean, so I'm still like have that kind of sharpness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so having met this person, but also like, again, like wanting to like really engage people and say, who else is having this problem? If it's one person, who gives a shit? One person and me, you know, it's not a business. I talked to this woman, I end up asking different friends through like surveys and also like just some case studies and a little bit of focus group work. First of all, dream music people want to forget. And I say forget intentionally, because if you hit skip or you hit mute, there's a bit of permanence to it. And there probably won't be never be a day where I need to hear I Hope You Dance ever again. But let's say it, for some reason I want to like forget Norah Jones. I'm going to hear her a year from now. Let's say I'm going through some sort of like rehab experience or breast cancer, and there are certain things about that time that are upsetting to me, or loss of a job. I may want to return to it. It's still my music. So few kind of deals with that lack of permanence. And to bore you further, I'm working on two features now. One is to be able to share stuff with people. So that's called social media integration. You can just say like, hey, I broke up with Norah Jones. And it's a great way of having people know what's going on for you, mm-hmm. but not really know what's going on. It's a nice entry point. And also Music Swap, which is, I typically show people how this works, like with wooden blocks. But if you have your playlist and you knock out Madonna, what could go in its place? And how would people want to vie for that? If you're an amazing music discoverer, and I bet you are, just like my friend Katie, she'd be the first person I'd go to. Mm-hmm. If it's like a workout, you know, mix, I feel like music is one of the best ways of promoting like your performance when it comes. It's a great performance enhancer. That's like, there's no drugs related to it. And to not have a buzzkill song come up or to have something that to keep you going is important. I think that Fugue is a way of not having simply algorithms deal with that.
But it's all through Spotify, right?
Right now it works with Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
Because like as someone who bootstrapped, I'm like, shit, like what can I work with? All right. Spotify has over 100 million users who do premium. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
And also currently works with Apple products, which again, I know is like limited, but I still want to get the most possible reach.
Right.
But things have still been a struggle. So that's why going to something like Boulder Startup Week is important to me, because I can get my ass kicked by really amazing mentors and other people, because I really believe in this. This is something that hasn't gone away for me.
So the app has a few functions then. It mm-hmm. helps you avoid the music you don't want to hear.
Right.
It helps you share music.
It shall. And then swap in new stuff to avoid, discover, or hide.
So the part that interests me the most is the discovery element of mm-hmm. it, because that's a big thing for me. I've been a DJ at the community station here in Boulder for almost 30 years, and arriving there really just sort of changed the course of my life and turned me onto a whole universe of music that I didn't know existed, because it's a very eclectic and non-mainstream station, KGNU. And so I've become, over the years, a real music snob. I probably will silently or, you know, quietly or not so quietly judge you for the music you put on. Mm-hmm. You being everybody, all
yeah,
of you.
Yeah, that I felt that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's every person.
I don't listen to mainstream music, at least mm-hmm. unless it's I'm out in places where it's being played. But
right.
I don't know what all the big hit songs and all that.
I'm with you. I'm like a WTMD person, which is a college radio, mm-hmm. or like I source things and listen through Spotify.
Yeah. See, I'm already like Spotify is not sufficient.
Enough.
No. If I like try to recreate a playlist that I've made for my radio show mm-hmm. in Spotify, I have about a 70% success rate, which is.
See? But they'll tell you that like they have this volumes upon volumes.
No, I did a whole Ignite talk about this actually back in December.
Okay.
About music discovery and curation and how we all get caught up in our own little algorithmic bubbles. And so it's really hard, despite all the amazing music out there. And this can be extrapolated to other, you know, to movies and books and everything else too, that there's so much out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard almost to discover like something truly new and different, because the algorithms just keep feeding us stuff that's similar to what we're already listening to. Or watching or reading.
And the ads do that.
I don't know. I find that to be problematic and a little sad, actually, that I feel like we're missing out on a lot of things because we just are paying attention to what the algorithms are feeding back to us. So when I listen to my Discover Weekly,
mm-hmm.
it's Discover, W-E-A-K-L-Y.
You
know, yeah. So no, you get your 30, you know, your 30 songs, and 20 of them I've already heard, or 15 I've already heard, 10 to 13 are Spotify. What made you think that I would like this song based on my listening history?
And you just take it.
But, you know, and then maybe there's two or three that are like, okay, that's pretty cool. Though I have to say this week's Discover Weekly was 0 for 30. But it's the same thing. You're just getting fed stuff based on what you already know. So you lose that thrill of really stumbling into something like totally new and different and completely disconnected from what you already know.
And your brain tells you that it's like, so it's such beautiful candy to have, to hear something new that really fits the place that you're in.
Yes.
In a lot of ways, like fugue is like mood or status based. And what you're getting at on the music end is something that resonates with me on like the advertising end, which is another way of like, of course, going through the monetization process for Fugue, because I've been on Instagram and I'm naming this app specifically, and they think that I am a crazy cat woman. P.S. I'm allergic. right. Yeah. No, seriously, I'm a crazy cat woman. I guess we're going with some really basic algorithms, right? Just okay. Right. She's like in her early 40s and a lesbian and blah, blah, blah. So therefore, so that's like that really pisses me off. They somehow think I'm interested in smokeless tobacco. I have no idea where the fuck that came from. And that also that I'm incontinent.
That's quite a combo. Baby.
Yeah, hot stuff. On the prowl in Boulder. So with something like Fugue, I also want to make sure that people are understood and that we expect ads. And like, I do want products to make sense for me. But if you know I'm going through a breakup and like learning new music, wanting to discover for that purpose, man, you could be telling me about locksmiths and about gyms and about new places to like hang out and different meetup groups. And that's meeting me where I am. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact you're talking about also having music meet you where you are. I think this is just, there's a lot of overlap in what we're saying, and it's definitely needed.
Yeah. So I don't know where this is going, but I'm curious to check out the app. And I mean, there's a lot of songs that I'd like to forget, basically, not really for emotional reasons, but just like Magic Carpet Ride. Great song. Mm-hmm. If I never hear it again, I'll be set.
Right. Hotel California.
No. Why do I need to hear that song again?
There was some sort of like gaucho version or some sort of Latin version I heard the other day on WTMJ.
I've got some cool remixes. Yeah. I mean, the remix, that's the thing. When I'm doing a DJ set and people want to hear, I want to hear 80s music or whatever. It's like, well, I'm not going to play the song, but I've got a lot of really cool remixes or edits or mashups or whatever. They're going to take people to that song. They're going to take people to that song, but without it just being the same old song. So it's going to hopefully take them, open up a new neural pathway for them or something. And
people get so pissed. They're just like, why, like, Bon Jovi slow down this song? I'm like, because it's beautiful and because he can, because it's different. Boom.
Coming back to Startup Week and just the whole thing in general, this is your first Boulder Startup Week.
Correct.
Why are you here? Why did you decide to come to Boulder?
Oh, thank you. Because if you said, why are you here? And like a little bit of silence, I'd be like, oh, this is uncomfortable. Why are you here?
You invited me?
Right. So for me, I just am so tired of the Baltimore ecosystem. And I have no idea who's hearing this or not. I think the most people know that like I stopped giving shits a few years ago, as soon as I entered food, especially. There's like a lot of basting. There's other ways to phrase it. But for me, I'll go back to food, right? That people are basing some of the same ideas and thoughts. There's also the idea, I mentioned this to you before we started, just idea of like crabs in a pot. I mean, also crabs are a big deal in Baltimore, and they should be. They're delicious. But if you're in the same goddamn pot and you're pulling down other crabs, you're still all going to boil. It's all going to get cooked. And I don't think there's enough openness or sharing there. Also, it's really hard. I feel like I'm trying to fit into something versus belonging. Mm-hmm. Anytime I have visited Colorado, and at least only been a couple of times for Boulder, I feel like it's more of a sense of belonging for me, and also being understood so quickly that everyone's processing speed seems to be so much swifter. And I think by just staying in the Baltimore environment, you know, least be damned, it's fine place to start a business or to try something really in a crappier, more difficult soil. But I'm tired of that, you know, and I feel like in order to grow, I need to be around people who are quicker thinkers. I also think about, if I go to sports analogies, I'm sorry in advance, but if you think about when you're neon deck circle and you're swinging a bat and it has a weight on it. I feel like I've been doing that a lot, but I'm still like on deck. I'm really not like getting up to hit. I feel like place like Boulder, altitude aside, I feel like I can actually maybe take the weights off. Mm-hmm. What would that be like for like my business and for me as a person? Or like when you're running track and they have those parachutes behind you, that's part of training, right? To make it extra hard. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I stay in Baltimore, I'm not going to always have that on me. So what way am I going to launch? And any type of energy I've gotten from here has all been like, I want you to do well. The more we all do well, like I guess the whole all boats rising thing, that's a vibe I have gotten. So if anyone thinks that I'm incorrect in assuming that or feeling that for me in Boulder, let me know, guys, if that's a bunch of bullshit.
No, that's definitely sort of the prevailing attitude around here. How actualized that is can vary from situation to situation, but in general, people are pretty friendly and supportive and want to see others succeed and aren't really like climbing up other people's backs to, you talk about the Baltimore crackpot, here it's more like maybe like a pie and like, let's just make a bigger pie and then we can all get bigger slices of it.
Right. Or do a tripumple. It's like a turducken, only various pies.
That sounds...
Oh, yeah.
A lot better than a turducken, that's for sure. Have you attended startup weeks in other cities?
I have not. I've been to a bunch of different events. I guess like the Delmarva Peninsula area. So like, you know, Baltimore, you know, DC, parts of Virginia. So not out this way. I have not gone west.
And what are your impressions of Boulder? The city, the community, our bagels?
And a non-deep level, I could probably move here and retain probably 90% of my wardrobe. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little like...
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, I do love a good blazer, but I can just retain like the... I love the fact you can hike, basically, is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that people like are active. I love how neat and clean it is here. And I love when speaking to people, just some of the... I don't know, just people, you can just curse and people think you're not undermining your intelligence here.
It's just...
The well-placed fuck.
It's just definitely feels a lot more... And it's real more- or relaxed out here. I grew up in Miami.
Okay.
And I transferred to CU. You know, I was 19 when I came to Colorado and I realized almost immediately, like, oh, that's what that feeling has been for the last 19 years is I don't like Miami. But oh my I didn't God. Know that because it was all I knew. And then I came to Colorado and I was like, oh, this is my place. These are my people. I miss the ocean. Every day. But other than that, there's something about Colorado for sure that, I mean, it's no surprise that people are flocking here.
Right.
Aside from because of the weather and the natural beauty and the geography and all that. Just there's just something about Colorado that's kind of special.
And there's even just like the food pricing. I mean, I went out to happy hour the other day and it was just comparable, if not cheaper than back home. I'm like,
really?
That's like real day-to-day stuff. And like, please, I understand about the whole ocean thing. Getting back to that very briefly, being from New Jersey, the beaches are stunning. The Jersey Shore is a bunch of New Yorkers coming in and invading. No, like it really is gorgeous. Even being in Maryland, I mean, there's such natural beauty, but I feel like you can always just visit those places.
Exactly. There's a lot of beaches in the world to go visit. What else? Anything else that you'd like to add? Anything that I missed that you're like, why didn't he ask me that?
It's impossible for you to have missed anything. And thankfully, like because of the environment that you set up, I'm so present in the moment that I'm not even thinking about what else we could be saying, but what we're saying.
Well,
am I just like Moby in that moment? Jeez, I think I reached a higher level of something.
Joan Canner from Bottoms Up Bagels and The Few Gap.
Boom.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your time in Boulder.
How could I not?
Good question. That was Joan Canner, founder of Bottoms Up Bagels and creator of The Few Gap. Learn more at bottomsupbagels.com and follow them on Twitter at BeMoreBagels. Episode number 47 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Internet of Things track sponsor, SolderWorks. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com.
Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, comments, and guest suggestions are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next time on the Boulder Tech Podcast.